Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, June 2nd, 2017. And with me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I'm definitely here, I guess.
I'm going to go with that.
And good morning. How are you?
I'm well. And I'm so glad that our listeners don't have to deal with the pre-show antics of figuring out what bit of technology is going to fail today. But we are bright people. We figured this out. And Jeff Butts, how are you?
I'm doing great, man.
Awesome. I'm so glad both of you were here and that I can actually hear you. That's a beautiful
thing. Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, sometimes it's a good thing.
That was a test.
Oh, well, hopefully we passed. I was so not prepared for a pop quiz. Anyhow, I want to start off today with a little bit of security talk. And this comes out of the news that OneLogin is a company that handles like single sign-on services and cloud-based data, encrypted data storage, and they do a lot for like bigger companies, and they got hacked. And
they're doing a lot for those bigger companies right now, aren't they?
Boy, howdy. Yeah. So what happened was hacker or hackers got a hold of their AWS, meaning Amazon Web Service, encryption keys, and were able to use those to get at all kinds of data that OneLogin was storing. And by all kinds of data, I mean customer data, and they were able to decrypt pretty much everything. So if you're a OneLogin customer or use OneLogin services in any way in the United States, odds are that whatever data you had through their service is compromised.
I just had a thought on this. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to license companies like this. You know how, you know, you have electrical equipment you plug into your house, it's Underwriters Lab approved. Mm-hmm. In order to build a building or do a bridge, you have to be licensed as an engineer in the state, you know, so that it proves that you have the education necessary to build bridges that people drive on can safely. Why aren't we licensing organizations like this so that, you know, they put up a test server and then a company goes out and with everything they've got, including all of those cool CIA tools, and tries to, you know, penetrate them with every known technique known to man. And if they pass the test, they get a license to operate. Just a thought.
You know, I like this thought, and I don't see it ever happening, at least not for a long time.
I know. I know. It's up to the customer to sort of hope and wish that this company knows what they're doing.
Yeah, I know. And I think that customer complacency is one aspect that would keep a verification service, an underwriting service, whatever, from being a thing. But also, there are governments that love the notion that encrypted data is easily accessible through various services. So
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, is that there's no regulation in place just for that reason, Jeff?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't think that the OneLogin data breach and an encryption failure had to happen, because from what I understand, they had to make a choice when they were developing what their encryption platform would be for their customers, to design one that allowed them to be able to decrypt everything themselves. Otherwise, how would the hackers be able to do this? Why didn't they set up something like so many other services provide, where they, as the service provider, do not have the means to access the data that their customers have encrypted?
That requires a special kind of perspective, restraint, and business acumen to make that decision. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, that's something you won't find in the specifications and page where you read about the service. It says They tell you all the good things about it, but they don't tell you things like that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot being said about it now. Now, so if you are an end user that's logging into some service that relies on one login as the back end for that, you as the end user really have no recourse because fixing this problem is out of your hands. If you, however, are a direct one login customer, so you are using the service to provide login access for your end users, you as that client need to go and go through the process that one login has to re-secure your data. Although at this point, I wouldn't feel comfortable as a one login customer saying everything that I have in their service has been protected again, because if it was accessible just across the board to hackers once they got the AWS keys, then why should I feel comfortable that after I change out my tokens and everything else that I'm going to have secure data again?
I've seen stuff like this before where a company announces that they've been hacked, and by in the discussion of the hacking, they say, oh yeah, we think 850 gigabytes of data was downloaded. And you have to ask yourself, well, either it happened really quick and nobody noticed, or they weren't paying attention. So a lot of data can be downloaded very quickly in modern technologies.
Yes.
Yes, it can.
Oh, go ahead. This is a good time for those people who were using one login not only to change their passwords, but to change their password manager. Because like you said, Jeff, I wouldn't feel comfortable sticking with one login based on this. The data should, passwords, credit card information, all of that stuff should be encrypted on the client machine first. And then if it's going to be stored in the cloud, re-encrypted in the cloud.
Good point, Jeff. Damn it. Jeff Butts. Mm-hmm. What was your name again? Good point, Mr. Butts.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, you were referencing the good looking Jeff. Yeah. So for me, as someone that thinks they have total control over all of their encrypted password data, something like the one login breach really is concerning. Now, to the best of my knowledge, I am not using one login services, although that may not be true, because as just the average person logging into a service that is relying on one login on the back end, maybe I do have a password somewhere that's exposed through this. So, so now I'm concerned, what do I have password-wise that may have been compromised, even though I've taken great measures to make sure that all the unique passwords I'm using across all the sites that I use are safe.
Hmm. That's why it's important to use a different password for every site.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And this whole thing has me very concerned, as I'm sure you can tell. Otherwise, why would I have chosen this as a topic for today? So I'm just curious, what are you guys doing for your own password protection? And if there's something that's in your specific process that you don't want to share because you feel that it may expose you to an attack in some way, I'm totally cool with that. And I'll start off by saying I'm using 1Password and it is working great for me. And I've been very comfortable with it. And I'm comfortable with the fact that if I forget my password for my 1Password database, I'm screwed. And yeah. That's actually a very comforting for me, because I know that no one else has a way to go and unlock my database for me. Without that password, I am completely screwed. So what I did was I took that one single password and I gave it to someone that is very close to me and that I trust implicitly, and they're the only other person that has that password, so that if something should happen to me, someone can still get at all of the data that's in my 1Password database. You know, so it'd be like if I'm incapacitated or I die, they can go and get into all my different accounts and shut things off and just take care of all of that for me. And that's, in a nutshell, that's how I'm dealing with keeping my password safe.
I don't like to go into a lot of details about how I do it, but there is one policy in practice that I invoke, and that is that I do not use iCloud Keychain. I ran across this recently when I was reviewing a product, and it said, you know, activate, go back and activate iCloud Keychain. What this does is it puts a master copy of your macOS or iOS keychain in the cloud and allows you to synchronize your keychain across devices. Mm-hmm. But what that means is that Apple is storing your keychain. And if you use banking information in your keychain or other sensitive information, and Apple is ever compromised. Now, Apple has, 600 or so million credit card numbers on file, and they have a lot of data in iCloud Keychain, and they encrypt almost all the stuff that goes through their servers. But if Apple were ever hacked one day and your keychain were grabbed, you'd be in a lot worse situation than the one login deal. So I don't use iCloud Keychain as a matter of policy. And it's something to reflect on, because every time you install a new copy of macOS or upgrade your iOS version, there is a step as you authenticate with your Apple ID that says turn on Apple iCloud Keychain. And this is something to be thoughtful about and make a decision about whether you want to do that. So that's my spiel.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't your keychain encrypted on your local machine before it is shared up to iCloud?
I presume that the encryption is maintained.
And I believe you are correct, Jeff.
I'd rather have it not in the cloud, even though it's encrypted. But that's okay. A good point, Jeff.
Fair enough.
All right. And Jeff, are you doing anything with password protection that you're comfortable talking about?
Yeah, I use 1Password for just about everything. I don't store passwords in Chrome because I don't trust Google. I do use iCloud Keychain to a certain extent, but mostly for web logins. And I have a different password for every site that I log into.
Same here.
Yep, different password for every site I log into. And I've been trying to think about what data I have in Keychain. And I believe it is primarily Wi-Fi access point passwords. Mm. Which makes sense, because if I'm going to auto log into a wireless network, then those passwords need to be stored in Keychain.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I think this is why it's important to have a sort of a personal IT policy, so that you have guidelines, and so you don't just go ahead and just embrace everything that comes along and say, oh, this is cool, I'll do that. This is cool, I'll do this. You have to have some sort of personal family IT policy that sets guidelines, and then you go, oh, I don't really need to do this, or I don't really need that service, or this violates my personal practices and I'm not going to do that. So that's always a good thing to have in mind when these services present themselves to you.
And sometimes it's inconvenient, but you have to do it.
Yes.
Regardless of how inconvenient it might be to have to switch from 1Password to an app on your iPhone to paste in a password, because that app doesn't support 1Password integration, you still have to do it.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I'm thinking about this whole thing, and I just realized that John Keat is going to look at this as solid proof of his premise that all cloud services are ultimately a lie, and that we should never rely on cloud services for anything. He wrote a whole piece about it. I'll include a link to that in the show notes. And
is that piece family friendly?
The piece is family friendly. Yes.
Okay.
But I'm sure that he's already read my article from this morning about one login, and that next week on Pop Point O, he will have a very unfamily friendly or a very family unfriendly. There we go. Family unfriendly rant on Pop Point O. There's another thing that I wanted to talk about today, and I'm sure this is going to come as a big surprise. WWDC. So
what?
I know, total shock. Good thing that you're sitting down for that one.
Yeah.
So the deal is Monday morning, which is June 5th, is the keynote at Worldwide Developers Conference, and we know just based on, or no, we presume based on many previous WWDC keynotes that we're going to get previews of the next versions of Apple's operating system. So in this case, it'll be macOS, iOS, watchOS, and tvOS. And then there will be a few other announcements.
And that go speaker along with OS?
That. And maybe speaker OS.
And maybe speaker OS. Yeah. Which I suppose could be an extension of tvOS or iOS. Maybe we're going to have five platforms now. But where I was going with this was, should we offer up what we think Apple may talk about, or is there even any point in doing that?
Well, I think there is a good reason to do it. It's hard to predict the future, but informed speculation from experts does one positive thing, and that is it opens up a dialogue in the community. People talk, they share information. So the market, as the Cloutrain Manifesto book says, markets are conversations. And to the extent that the community has an open discussion and conversation about what they'd like to see from Apple and what they're expecting reflects the needs and the interests of Apple's customers. And so that glass half empty approach is to say, well, you don't really know the future, so why bother? But the glass half full approach says, these are the things we are mindful of and we and the community is interested in and talking about. And perhaps that's useful, maybe even a little bit, to Apple to hear that.
All right. Well, I like that. And to that extent, Jeff, what you alluded to, I think is something we may very well see at WWDC, which is the Siri speaker, the Siri voice appliance or voice assistant appliance that people presume is going to compete with Amazon Echo and Google Home. And here's what I think. After Dave Hamilton came up with his idea that this is actually going to be something that, while it does echo like things, is actually going to be more of a competitor to the Sonos connected wireless home audio system platform. And that just seems like a very intriguing path for Apple to go down. And what I think is going to happen is that Apple will show us the Siri speaker, and they're going to do with this like they have done or like they did with Apple TV when it was getting app support, where they gave developers early access to the device. So we all knew it was coming. Developers got it. They could start working with it. And then a few months later, when the device ships for the public, the app platform for that has already been building up. I think they will do the same thing with this Siri speaker.
Or perhaps they've already done it.
Oh, I'm sure if they're going to show it off.
If they're
going to
do it, it's already been done.
Yeah, there will be a handful of select developers that have already had access to this. And then the general developer pool, a registered developer pool, will be able to get at it after the keynote. And they'll have to do the same thing as before, where they have to pay for the device, and it'll be like some some ridiculously low price so that they can afford to get one and probably have to go into a pool because of limited supply. But I think that's where Apple will go with the speaker if they announce it on Monday.
Yeah. I'll tell you some things I don't expect to see. I don't expect to see any discussion of iPhone 8 because that's a September event. Mm-hmm. I personally don't expect to see a new MacBook Pro because we just got a new MacBook Pro in 2016. And I know people are eager to have an update 6 months later, but I think that'll again be another fall event. I'm not expecting pessimistic me to see a new Apple TV with 4K support because I've grown to be disappointed in that regard. But I think we'll see a lot about WWDC related topics, a Swift discussion, Apple Pay discussion. We'll see the Siri speaker. And I think we're going to see some new iPads. That will be the hardware at WWDC, I think. The high time we saw some new iPads married with some really great modifications to iOS 11 to tease out the power and capability of the iPad hardware.
I agree with you, John, but I think that we will see a new Apple TV.
I hope so.
I think Cupertino will have finally caught on that 4K is not going away.
We can only hope.
So unlike Blu-ray, it's not a bag of hurt.
No, it's not a bag of hurt. And you know, their IMAX support it. Almost all of their modern computers support 4K. Even my aged, long in the tooth 2010 Mac Mini puts out 4K through the DisplayPort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it does seem odd that that we don't have 4K support yet, even though there's not a lot of content out there, you know, for streaming. The fact that we can make our own 4K content, and we can stream whatever essentially we want to our Apple TV, we ought to be able to look at our own 4K content.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I hope so too.
Well, we're out of time, so we need to wrap up.
We're always out of time.
I know, we're always out of time. And for me and for Dave Hamilton, we're running out of time even faster because we both have to finish getting prepped so that we can fly out to San Jose for WWDC. So Dave Hamilton, Brian Chaffin, and I are going to be on location at WWDC next week. And then we have our totally capable crew manning the fort while we're on location. So, John, you will be here, and Jeff, you will be here. And the point is, we're going to have people all over everywhere coming up with all kinds of coverage for you and analysis about what's going on and being announced at WWDC. So be sure to check out our website all week long, and be sure to listen to Daily Observations every day. And then on Wednesday, Brian and I will be recording Apple Context Machine. And then at the end of the week, Dave Hamilton and John Braun will wrap up WWDC on Mac Geek Gap. So we're going to have a lot to keep you informed about what's happening. So be sure and stick with us all next week. And with that, Jeff, thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Yes, the pleasure is mine. I really enjoy having both of you on the show. I also really enjoy having our listeners here every day. I love that you guys share your thoughts and ideas with me, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to think about WWDC. And also, if there's specific developers that you want me to try and talk to while I'm at WWDC, let me know, and I'll see if I haven't already scheduled a meeting with them, I'll see what I can do. So you can send me messages on Twitter at TMO Daily. You can send me emails, observations@macobserver.com, and you can leave comments in the show notes. I'll be looking all those places to see what you guys have to say and who you want me to talk to. And wow, we should wrap up and get prepped for next week so we can have an awesome time at WWDC. We'll see everyone again on Monday.